Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Voices for Justice tonight on October 15th, 2009. I'm your host, Michelle Bart. We're coming to you live tonight from many parts of the country, including Washington, New York, and, of course, Florida. We have a great show for you tonight. Our expert panel will be taking your questions in a little while. We'll be exploring the emotional, physical, and financial aspects associated to one of the highest profile cases in the country, the Casey Anthony case. Tonight, the panel, all of you listening, and the callers will all agree to disagree about this case, but one common belief we all believe in. We want justice for a beautiful angel named Kaylee Marie. Tonight, let's all have that voice for justice. Tonight, we're going to welcome our panel. Many of you know him as a regular on Issues with Jane Velez. Dr. Dale Archer will be with us in a few minutes. And one of the busiest crime bloggers and host of Fugitive Fridays, Levi Page, is also with us. As a reporter on the case in Orlando and a radio host for Clear Channel Radio, Rosie Franco will be joining us. James Copenhaver, a private investigator and a man that actually helped in the search efforts for Kaylee Anthony through Tim Miller and Texas Equisearch, and owner of Copenhaver and Associates, James will join us. And later in the show, Mark Williams, he's going to be joining us again, folks. So please stay with us until half an hour after the hour show here. Known to many as a regular on Nancy Grace, Mark will be giving us an update on upcoming hearings, the trial, and the happenings in the case against Casey. We welcome all of our guests with us this evening, and we want to let you know that the panel will be taking your calls in a bit, so the call-in number is 347-838-8622, or you can also post your questions on our live chat at blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes. Welcome to all of our guests. How is everyone tonight?
Great. Thank you.
James, are you on? Who else is on with us this evening? We've got Levi, Dr. Archer, and who else just came on? Okay. At any rate, tonight we're going to be talking, as we all know, about emotional and the physical and the financial aspects to this case. And Levi, I want to start with you. I'm not a fan of bloggers, but I am a fan of your show, my friend. I like many other people that came to this particular case, have endured a lot through the bloggers out there. But what makes a young man like yourself, with a heart in the right place, come to a case like this and want to be a part of it?
Well, I think that part of it is that people get so focused on the key players and irrelevant information. I think that we just need to keep it relevant and focus on Kaylee Anthony and the murder investigation and not the drama that goes on in some of the other blogs.
That's a good point. There is a lot of drama, but then again, there's a lot of drama with this particular mm-hmm. case. I noticed that you've had a lot of shows on this particular case and many others. It seems as if Florida is really going strong with, unfortunately, these type of cases. But, you know, how difficult is it to actually book your guests on the show and then try to continue talking about a case that really not only has impacted a nation but has also actually has really brought a lot of people down and depressed. And we'll get to Dr. Archer in a few minutes. But mm-hmm. Many of the cases we have done on our show, you know, those are the types of people that are calling in. They, too, have been affected by a case they have never even met the family. So how does that impact you?
Well, I think that the media, whenever they'll report on something and then they'll let it die. And I think that with shows like mine and yours is that we can report on it until there's a resolution, until there's a verdict in the aftermath, not just whenever it's big and hot and an easy story to cover whenever the child first goes missing, and then drop it when there's other cases and other news.
I do agree with that. It's hard to keep a case going. We work on many of them, and it's hard to keep the faces and the cases visible. But as you know, with the Haley Cummings case and the Kaylee Anthony case, they tend to get a lot more airtime. And it's good to know that there are people out there like yourself doing shows that try to stay neutral. And I'm going to try that tonight. I know that we have a lot of people in the chat room, and we've had thousands of people email us in the last couple days. I'm going to try to stay neutral as well. But like the rest of us, we have been so impacted by this case. And the one thing that makes me different than many other people that have come on to these shows, I have met this family. And so I've been in Kaylee's room. So Dr. Archer and I were joking earlier that he was the first guest on. I might need his services too, but Dr. Archer, what about the emotional roller coaster that a case like this, for many of us, causes in our lives? How does a case like this impact one's health and wellness?
Well, you have to realize that this particular case and cases like this are so prominent in the national media because this is every parent's worst nightmare. This is every adult's worst nightmare who has relatives who are young children. I mean, this is a child that was murdered. And so I think when you understand from that perspective and then you throw in the uncertainty of could a mother actually be responsible for murdering her child, then all of us are affected emotionally, and then we want to get involved with it. We want to know what makes this person tick. Could she actually have done it? And we analyze and micro-analyze every single aspect of her and the case and the evidence, and all of us become tied in and emotionally invested in it. So I think that's why cases like this become so huge on the national scene, and it's really hard for a lot of us to let go of it, because anytime anything comes up, you think back of everything else you know about the case, and it pulls you back in because, again, it's a beautiful little girl. She was murdered, and there's a chance that her mother was responsible for it.
You know, you mentioned the family quite a bit in your response, and I'm glad you did, because a lot of people tend to forget that despite what the circumstances of this child's disappearance and murder had been and who may have been to blame, the grandparents, the other family members, the friends, and everybody that knew this child have gone through something none of us listening tonight would ever want to have to endure. What do you think the emotions have taken on this family, and in particular, what this family has been through, in your opinion, do you think they're going to be able to make it through depending on the outcome of the trial and everything in the end?
Well, first of all, you can certainly never, ever say, no matter how horrible a stress anyone has been subjected to, that they can't come out the other side and be quote-unquote normal. And so I think that's a huge misperception with a lot of these cases that I talk about. I mean, J.C. Dugard being the latest, where they're saying, oh, she's ruined for life, she'll never be the same. You can't say that.
Oh, look at her with People magazine, though.
Absolutely.
I mean,
and I was saying that up front with a lot of criticism from my peers who were saying, oh, you don't know what you're talking about, no one can survive this, no one can be normal. That's absolutely wrong, because individuals can survive things all the time, and we don't know until we start working with that person. And my deal with her, not to digress too much, but she survived for 18 years, raised two kids with this monster, so she's a survivor, and survivors survive. That's what they do. So for her, getting back to the normal world would be really not that big of a deal after what she had been through. So we switch over now to the Anthony family. And obviously, if you talk about George and Cindy, then you have a situation that is of really nightmare proportions, because not only did they lose a granddaughter, they have the potential that their own daughter was the murderer. So you can imagine the emotions that they would be going through, and anyone who's related to the family would be going through, because not only do they have to grieve the loss of this little girl, but they have to cope with the possibility that one of their own family members was responsible for it. So it would be a roller coaster of just epic proportions. And I think that we're quick in the media to jump and say, oh, well, they went and had, you know, lobster bisque at the Ritz-Carlton after they learned about the body being found. But it's everyone copes in their own way. So I think that they are going to have highs, they're going to have lows. You know, they've done some things that I would question and say, you know, what were they thinking when they did that? I mean, I think their depositions were very scripted, and, you know, they brought their own camera and on and on and on. But at the end of the day, we cannot judge the emotions that they're feeling. I mean, so we have to be able to give them a little bit of leeway to be able to cope in their own way, with the understanding that this is a stress that is just, as you mentioned, impossible for any of us to really, truly comprehend.
But I think that's a good point. I think that a lot of people go after George and Cindy, and I'm not a defender of them, and I've been critical of them sometimes, but I think that people need to remember is that it's Casey that's on trial. It's not George or Cindy.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And folks have to also remember that in many situations that occurred in the last year since July of 2008, this family weren't out wining and dining themselves. You know, other people were taking them out. So to judge that, then judge the people that took them out. But personally, in my opinion, you know, again, like you said, Doctor, you know, you can't judge somebody, and there's not a handbook out there to tell a family how to react and what to say and what to do when this happens. The police they don't hand over a book to a family when their child has gone missing and say, this is the way to do it. Now, we can go to National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and other organizations like them that have some guidelines, but in the end, yeah, they can overcome this, and in the end, hopefully it will be justice for Kaylee, and things will get moving in a more normalcy way in the end. But until then, it just seems like there's shows and folks out there that continue with the emotional aspect of things on the family, on the media. You know, if the media does one thing, You know, Nancy Grace gets herself bashed a lot, but in the end, you got to think it is a story; it has to be told. And in the end, the child's face was kept in the media spotlight.
But Michelle, can I interject something real quick?
Yes, James, go ahead.
Let's hold that up to a standard, though, and let's have some morals and some integrity when these media outlets do tell this story. It is a story. And the community, you know, everyone's tied to the story, but let's have some integrity about that before we proceed. I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, I was just going to comment on the fact that in terms of the emotions that and George and Cindy and what they're going through, that everyone grieves in their own way. And so, and that's actually an interesting statistic to back that up, is the huge elevation of the divorce rate when there is the death of a child in a married couple's life. And that is attributable to the fact that people grieve differently. And so if the husband, for example, may be someone who likes to keep everything inside and doesn't want to talk about it, that's fine. That's his way of dealing with it. The wife may want to talk about it. So with the two of them together, they think that the other one is acting inappropriately, and it places a huge stress on the marriage. So what we learn in psychiatry is you have to allow people to grieve in their own way. And there is no, as you said, there's no cookbook, there's no right way. There's a way that works for each and every one of us. And so we have to be understanding of that. And I think that they have been really brought under the media spotlight unfairly, I think, to some extent, because all of their actions have been analyzed and overanalyzed at every single thing they've done. And basically, it's been compared to, well, what would a normal grieving process look like? Well, there is no normal grieving process. So I think that it makes it seem that, you know, the media is just in a feeding frenzy with these folks. And perhaps
you know,
to some extent, they are.
I only buy that to an extent. You know, we can excuse Georgia and Cindy Anthony, but some of the things that the defense is saying about Casey Anthony having some this ugly coping whenever she went into bars and parties and danced around a stripping pole, you know, I think that's out there. I think that's ridiculous. And, you know, we can excuse Georgia and Cindy, but Casey's behavior goes way out there, beyond ridiculous, and we can't excuse that. There's no excuse when your child is missing to go out there and dance on a stripper pole in a bar.
No, my view on that is that ugly coping is controversial, to say the least, in the field of psychiatry, but I think in her case a better term would have been ugly groping.
Well, James, let me ask you this. You know, many lives, as we know, have been impacted by this case on all different levels. But in this particular investigation and ones that you've seen in missing person cases, are we at a close for the investigation, or do you think that this is like the calm before the storm?
Michelle, I think it would be the calm before the storm. I mean, look at the thousands upon thousands of documents that that the state has released, for instance. You know, if you had a chance to peek into their entire case, one would think that there would be thousands more documents that haven't been released to the public, which, my personal opinion, I have an issue with some of the documents that have been released. I mean, it's I think it it relates to the integrity of the state's the sheriff's office investigation. You know, I'm not certainly going to bash the police nor the defense or the government, but
well,
the
defense had a chance to get a gag order on this case, but the defense is the one that did not want the gag order.
But Levi, not to debate you, but to debate you, if you're in Baez's camp, and you have the state presenting all of this evidence, whether it's true or not, leaking stuff to the media and these other
outlets.
Well,
it's not leaked.
Well, it was released.
Well, because of the Sunshine Law. That's the law there in Florida. All of this stuff automatically becomes public because of the Sunshine Law when it's going through the legal process. It's not leaking. And, you know, I think the defense likes to complain a lot that we're knowing a lot of information and that they're trying this case in the media. But the reality is the defense, earlier on, that when the judge, they could have asked for a gag order, but they did not agree to it. The defense is the one that did not want a gag order. And I see the defense on television a lot more than the prosecution. I don't even know the prosecutor's name. The prosecutor is not as well known as the defense attorneys, and the prosecutor has not made the TV appearances that the defense attorney has. So I think that we can complain about all this stuff being released, but I just think that a lot of it's defense hype.
Levi, I'm going to disagree with you, and this is why. I'm working a homicide case. What's a death investigation out of South Florida currently? And without giving a lot of that up, it's still open in terms of it has not been prosecuted yet. The Sunshine Law is under Florida Statute 119. Mm-hmm. I have sent numerous requests down for certain items that you would think that would be public by now, but since it has not been prosecuted and brought before the court, those documents are protected as a work product. So my question is, how can you release thousands and thousands of pages of documents? Number one. Number two, you would have to be spoiling the prospective jurors out here, whether it's in this, you know, the county of Orange or even the entire state of Florida. Everyone knows this case, and I see some real concerns in terms of the integrity of the case.
Well, I think Well, I think that the reason this is being released is because someone has been charged. In the Haley Cummings case, for example, we're not getting a lot of information on that case. The Sunshine Law hasn't kicked in because nobody's been charged.
No, I still hold to my cards. I mean, it's become a complete circus, and it really makes our
system.
Well,
I think we'd all agree with that comment, too.
Yeah.
Definitely. It has become a circus. I mean, I believe that early on the whole case came off of Kaylee and on to Casey, which in the end it should have always been about Kaylee from day one, and then prosecute the person involved later. But I still believe with the findings, which I still have many questions about, you know, the bottom line is if that poor child had laid out there all of that time, she could have been found a lot earlier if we had focused on her and not the case. And that's my opinion, because she was in an area that had been looked at many times, which I go, James, I want to ask you, with the physical aspects to this, okay? Now, I'm talking from things that I know and from media and other sources, but from somebody that searched for Kaylee, who has been involved with our friend Tim Miller, hours of investigations with the searches with Tim and other organizations, weeks and months at hotels, weeks and months of hotels for reporters and searchers, you know, sleepless nights for many, and mileage. I can't even count the number of mileage by air and car people have utilized. The physical demands on this case and all of cases that investigators like yourself and Tim Miller's have to go through, can you give us a little insight to that? Because a lot of our listeners had wished they had come out to help. And others did come out to help, but that physical aspect to that, and I'll go straight to Dr. Archer after you respond, but the physical aspect of that had to have taken its toll.
Well, Michelle, just putting that search, the last search together, I mean, it took a toll on everyone that was involved, including our staff. I mean, for instance, we opened up a phone line looking for team leaders to go out and organize a search in an orderly and integrity fashion. I mean, it was just overwhelming with the volunteer calls that we received out of our office, and we're talking just, you know, in the state of Florida. And it's almost as if you're riding a roller coaster. And it's just like any other job. You get a good day or a good hour, and then something happens, and that may drop, you know, the floor may drop from under your feet, and then you're back on another high again. You know, if you recall, those folks, you know, we had a couple of them drop out during the search from heat and lack of hydration. So the physical demands are enormous, and that's not even getting into the mental demands. You know, you have parents, you have sisters, you have siblings, you have fathers, grandparents who are out volunteering their time, and, you know, it's an emotional roller coaster for those folks.
And what about the demands on the animals? You all used horses, you used dogs, et cetera?
Oh, absolutely. I actually recruited a rancher from South Orange County to sort of corral up the animals. They had some horses and some dogs, and that guy's sole mission was to make sure everyone had a place to board their horses, water, food, hay, et cetera. And, you know, I recall driving out on a Monday or Tuesday morning at 7:30, you know, these animals had been ridden all day the day before, and they have to rest just like the humans. And, of course, I mean, the animals they're just like humans. They have to be properly maintained and hydrated.
Dr. Archer, the physical demands obviously take a toll on us, but I would think that the more physical we're drained, the more emotions come into it. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think you have to separate, in this case, the professionals who are involved in the case, this is their job, and they do this not only in this case but in other cases day after day. So I think that those individuals are at one end of the spectrum where we would expect them to be much better prepared to be able to cope with something as tragic as this. And on the other hand, you have the volunteers that are out there searching. And many times with those folks, they get no preparation whatsoever. They are just told, look, this is what we're doing. We're looking for this little girl. Get out there and see what you can find. And I think that many cases, I've talked to individuals that have been involved in things like that for the first time, and it can be a very psychologically draining toll when all of a sudden, halfway through the middle of the day, it hits them. You know, I'm looking for perhaps a girl that's alive and maybe a girl that's dead. So I think that, yeah, the emotions will definitely run the gamut there, but and it's not certainly not for everyone. And some people have been involved in this type of thing once and say, oh, I'll never do it again. It was just too much. But again, this is just a extraordinary case that is going to bring out every aspect of anyone's emotion who spent any time looking in it, getting involved in it, or participating.
Just to remind folks, the call-in number is 347-838-8622.
Hi, you've reached Margie, legal assistant to John Zielinski. I'm away from my desk right now. Please leave me a message and I'll call you back as soon as possible. Thank you.
Can everyone hear me okay?
Yeah, I can now.
I
lost you for a while.
Where that's going. Well, we're leaving a message on someone's voicemail. I don't know how that happened.
Oh, so everyone heard that, huh?
Okay. Yeah, so whoever that doctor is, I think it might have been Dr. Archer. Are you still with us?
Yeah, no, I'm still there. No, it wasn't me. I think whoever it is going to have an interesting voicemail when they wake up tomorrow.
Okay, let me see. Let's see if James, are you with us?
I am with you.
Okay. My question was going to be, again, folks, call in number 347-838-8622. In regards to, you know, I wished Rosie Franco could have joined us. I believe she was stuck in a meeting, but months of being away from home, like the media, okay? I know Dr. Archer, and then I'll ask Mark Williams later on in the show this question. But, you know, the media, if it wasn't for many of them, I agree to disagree with the media. I've been on both sides of the microphone, and it's a tough job. You know, it's an emotional job, because when you have to report on a case like this with in regards to Kaylee Anthony, and in the beginning, like you were saying, Dr. Archer, not knowing if she's alive or dead, and you're reporting things, and when you report something, it might impact if she comes home alive or dead. The media spent months and weeks away from their home. Many of the national media outlets, you know, their diet was impaired, meals on the go, not sleeping in their own bed. That has to take a toll as well. Would you agree?
Well, I guess I would agree, but these are professionals, and so this is the career they chose, and this is what they chose to do. So I don't think in that particular case that I would have a lot of sympathy feeling sorry for them, because they're doing their chosen profession. And, yeah, some of these cases are long, some are involved, but you know what, if you want to be a reporter and this is what you want to do, then this is going to be par for the course. So I want to comment on one other aspect of it. I mean, I think that many people are quick to bash the media in cases like this, saying that, oh, they're micromanaging, they're overanalyzing, they're too involved, they shouldn't be doing all this, just leave it alone, give it a break. But 2 points. A, I think that a lot of good can come out of this. In terms of, it helps people understand that, you know what, there are brutal things like this that are happening every single day in America and in the world. And you've got to be on your guard. You've got to be aware. You've got to understand that this could happen to you. It could happen to your child. And so I think that it raises the level of awareness, and that raises the preparation level across the board like a rising tide. And I think that in the end, hopefully it will help keep all of us a little bit, and our families a little bit safer, just understanding that there are real crimes like this that occur every single day. So I think that the media does do a good job with that. I also think they do a good job with keeping the awareness of the case high, especially before you've actually found a body and confirmed that it is indeed a death. And if you recall on this case, I mean, really the frenzy occurred when she was a missing child and up until the time when the body was found. And then at that point, over time, it gradually started to taper off.
James, go ahead.
And if it wasn't for the media, who knows how long it would have taken for Kaylee to be found, because she was on television every night. And who knows, that a meter reader might not have stumbled upon the body like he did.
Definitely. Yeah. The media, again, you know, you can agree to disagree with the media. I may not always agree sitting on this side that of their what they have to do. But in order for them to air something, they have to do their job. And in the end, the Haleys and the Kayleys and the Tabithas and all of the kids missing, their photos and their cases are out there. Let me ask you, Dr. Archer, we are talking about a case that's not completed. Obviously, we have a trial coming up. And what would be the demeanor or the emotional impact this has all had, taken out of the equation that the world thinks that Casey is a sociopath and all of this stuff that they have just analyzed her? What does it do to one that's stuck in a cell contained by herself?
You mean in terms of her personally?
Her personally, or any inmate for that matter, that is in a secluded area.
Well, it depends on the personality, and so you have some individuals who thrive in jail and actually do very poorly in the so-called real world and do much better in a prison setting because it's regimented and everything's structured for them. And so, and then all the way to the other end of the spectrum, where people just have total collapses and breakdowns because they're thrown into jail, whether they're guilty or not. So I think that in her particular case, there's so much to occupy her time in terms of preparing this case and working with the attorneys that, it's not like she's sitting there and not doing anything. I mean, there's a lot going on. And I mean, just I really haven't looked at this case in a while, and just to prepare for the show was reading all of the things that have been going on with the attorneys in terms of preparing for her defense. And so I can imagine that she's actively involved in that and probably doesn't have a lot of time to be thinking about, you know, philosophizing on how she got there. I think that after the trial is over, typically that's when that would come crushing down upon her, of course, depending on the verdict.
Any other input on that as far as from the investigation standpoint? James, since you deal with some people that have been alleged for killing someone?
Well, I mean, look, this is a complex case, and you know, people could compare this all the way to the OJ trial, to other high-profile cases. Here's my issue with this thing. I mean, it's costing, they're not a price on anyone's life, certainly, or a crime. But just look at the mere fact of what it's costing the community to put on this trial. I mean, I had heard rumors it's upwards into the $2 million bracket now for everyone that's involved.
I would probably think that that's a very conservative number. And by the time this is done, I would assume that if you pull everybody in, media and all the businesses and the organizations that came out and all of the police and investigations, and not to mention the trial itself, would probably be closer to billions. Wouldn't you agree?
No, not billions. not going to be that much. Maybe 5 to 10 million.
Well, I don't know.
I would say 10
million,
Doc.
When you think that some of the stories out there seem to be that individuals of the defense and other factors in the case had gotten paychecks already and things of that nature for their stories. You know, you had neighbors, for crying out loud, that called themselves friends for many years, had no problem whatsoever selling their story for $10,000 to the National Enquirer. So if you add up every dime spent on this case from all aspects, it's pretty high. It might not be billions, but it is pretty high. And I think I had this conversation with James amongst a couple other people. If Casey did the crime, she needs to pay the time. And no matter who's done the crime, they have to do the time. And in the end, you know, I'm going to go back to you right now, James. Let's talk the investigation for a minute, because it does play a factor in the physical and emotional aspects of everything. You know, where's the smoking gun? Because if there is one, they better start using it to close this case out quicker so it won't cost taxpayers a lot of money in the end.
Let me just back up one moment. I had overheard a conversation. It was somewhere in the neighborhood of $120,000 that it cost Tim Miller's group to put on that search. So, I mean, there's $100,000 right off the bat. Getting back to your smoking gun question, being an investigator my entire adult life, and I keep going back to these documents that have been released, and I know that Levi may disagree. My concern is, where does it stop? I mean, does the government have everything they need to do to go out and absolutely without any question prosecute this case to the fullest extent to where it goes to a jury? And what I mean by that is, you know, we have an FBI lab that alleged that may have contaminated some evidence. Here's the whole problem. If the state has an airtight case, why haven't we seen some type of positive ID on this child? Was it the child? Why haven't they released those documents is my first question, and I'll answer my own question if you give me a moment.
Okay.
More importantly, you know, if they don't have a strong enough case for her, why doesn't she plea out? I'm asked that question quite frequently.
Question. I mean, if they have the smoking gun, release it so that the defense says, oh, my God, they have this on our client. We need to take this plea, and then call it quits, and everyone's happy, and we move on. Well, you know, why wait?
Here's my other part. You know, either A, Jose Baez and his camp is doing an extremely great job in defending his client. The issue I have is no one that I have heard interviewed in this case has ever said that Casey has admitted to actually hurting her child. We've not heard
never admitted that, and I believe the 130-something prosecuting witnesses, all the boyfriends, girlfriends, whatever else are in on their list, none of them would ever admit that Casey would have ever harmed her daughter. And, you know, I know you're answering a question. Gary in the chat room is posting, you know, how on earth did Casey manage not to leave DNA at the scene of the crime? So I guess that goes kind of in with what you're talking about, because the smoking gun would be her DNA, but how does a forensic specialist at the FBI, how does that accident occur, but yet this childlike teenager, mother of a baby that's dead, not leave the DNA behind?
The trace of the DNA.
The trace. Gary in the chat room is asking that, and it goes to play on the smoking gun.
Well, the area was under flood, and it was flooded, so that would wash away a lot of evidence.
Well, I think the other thing that's important to note here is that even though many folks have already convicted her of this murder, I will say that in my mind, it is not definitive that, forget whether she's found guilty or innocent, it's not definitive in my mind that she was definitely the murderer. So, I mean, I think that we have to realize that there may not be a smoking gun because she didn't do it.
That's a great point.
That has what... Go ahead, Levi.
there doesn't have to be a smoking gun in these cases for someone to be innocent. I mean, guilty. There's a lot of cases that are tried on circumstantial evidence, and they don't have smoking guns. They don't have forensic evidence. Their behavioral evidence of Casey Anthony, just like in the Scott Peterson, could be what does her in the, when this gets to trial.
Well, no, yeah, I completely.
Everybody keep in mind. I mean, in a criminal case, unlike a civil, where you, if it's a civil case, you just have to, you know, you have to tip the scales of justice. In a criminal case, it has to be a preponderance of evidence, i.e., I mean, the scales can't be tipped. The burden is they have to be physically. I mean, it's a one-sided scale at that point.
And, guilty beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Absolutely, Doc.
And right now, it's not really a shadow of a doubt because. Really, Casey's guilty in everyone's mind based on character assassination.
Yeah.
You know,
no, I mean,
forensically, there's not a thing to link her to doing this heinous crime. There's nothing forensically. I would be the first, no matter how hard, Doctor Archer, I'll put this to you. No matter how difficult it would be for me personally at this point, to sit back and tell everybody, let me crow, I've been drinking the Kool-Aid too long, whatever the bloggers keep posting about me, but show me the evidence, and then I'll shut up. But right now, I'm not seeing anything on the fact that this woman, now I'm not saying she doesn't know anything, I'm just saying there is nothing in all of those documents that have been released to show anything that this woman has done anything. And I said on the last thing, and from an emotional standpoint, for everybody involved, I would hope and pray that there is a major smoking gun on the prosecution in that courtroom the day they go to trial, because a jury would most likely find her guilty. And if this girl goes to the death chair, or serves time in prison the rest of her life for a crime she didn't commit, it would be horrible, not only on everybody involved, but for this family that has already lost enough.
Well,
and that's where I stand on this. And Levi, you know, I'd be happy to be on your show at one point, too, and I already hear the hate mail coming, but that is the God's honest truth. I have no problem saying Casey did the crime, but show me the proof.
Well, I mean, I think that, first of all, I agree you don't need a smoking gun in order to get a murder conviction. But second of all, it does need to be beyond a reasonable doubt. So, I mean, I think that with everything that's come out to this point, personally, I would say that the odds are greater that she's going to get off than she's going to be convicted, unless there are things that are being held back that we don't know about, which is possible. But I think you're right. I think that in the media's mind and in the shows that I've been involved with, that everyone on the panels pretty much uniformly thinks she's guilty and she needs to be punished and on and on and on. And I'm just not ready to take that step yet because I'm like you. I think that there still is a big doubt in my mind. I'm not talking about anybody else, but in my mind that she is actually guilty of this. So, I mean, as the trial plays out, I think
you know
we'll
what's
learn
happening
more.
Right now, Dr. Archer. You hear the mail you're getting? They're going to want you to see somebody.
No, I mean, I did a show last week where I was defending Misty Cummings. So believe me, I get it. I understand what type of mail you can get, but I just think that if we're going to be unbiased and we're going to present this case and we're going to be experts in the media, then we have to. To be just that, we have to be unbiased. We can't rush to judgment when really in this case and in the Misty Cummings case, there's very, very little evidence that is a slam dunk, absolutely she did it no matter what. And people are making assumptions based on behavior. And, you know, in the Misty Cummings case, I mean, she was 16 when this happened, 16 years of age when, you know, the child went missing. When Haley Anthony Cummings went missing. So, you know, you have to factor that into the equation where you're analyzing somebody and their behavior, and this is a 16-year-old kid that you're trying to attribute full adult characteristics to, and a lot of times it really, really does cause a problem in trying to come up with a psychological analysis, which would be equal for right for an adult, but not for a kid. You know, and in this particular case, I mean, we've got a girl. Yeah, her behavior has been very, very suspect, without a doubt. But you can't convict someone of murder just based on their behavior. So, you know, I'm trying to keep an open mind about it, and I just don't think that we should, if we're going to be media experts, jump in there and say, yeah, she's guilty, let's hang her, without letting the process play out.
Well, I think it's important that we let the process play out because, you know, I'm some of the forensic evidence may come under attack, and, you know, I'm not a forensic expert, but what I come at it from is a common sense expert. There were computer searches where she had looked up neck-breaking recipes.
Allegedly looked up.
It was on her laptop.
Anyone had access to that computer. It wasn't even in her house,
her
and they confiscated
laptop.
It. Pardon me?
It was her own personal laptop.
But who
right,
had
but
it
wasn't it, even in the place it should have been when they confiscated it. It was at a boyfriend's house, one of which had the chloroform ad on his own website. So, you know, anybody could have accessed her computer. Mine was just hacked, actually. Nothing to do with this case, but it happens. And Cindy's was hacked, and I know that for a fact. So, you know, anything could happen. So unless you're sitting right in front of her and you see her do something, it's still, if I was a juror, you still wouldn't be able to convince me.
Well, it comes down to the time she did those searches and where her boyfriend was at the time. Again, that's up to a jury to decide.
What happens if, and I haven't read this, and you may know the answer to this, Michelle, and that's why I want to bring it out. Going back to the collection of evidence and processing of evidence, the DNA and et cetera, that is purportedly going to convict her based on circumstantial evidence, what if this car that she was driving that was left at Amscot was in fact towed to a tow yard and policy would dictate for that vehicle to be locked up in an impound building on an interior lockup to where it's secured from the weather? What if that car was left outside with the keys in it? Would that change anything on the preponderance of evidence?
I don't know the answer to that as far as from a legal standpoint, but I know what you just described wasn't the case with this car, and I know that for a fact.
Okay.
So I don't know what they're doing about that situation, but when I heard where that car was picked up, I was appalled.
Yeah.
So, and I go back to the same thing. Where's the forensic proof? Yeah, it smells like there's a dead body in it, but when the Anthony's got that car back, immediately Casey was arrested. So she had no time to drive it, so there was a dead body sitting in it for 19 days. Well, why is it that when they picked up the car at Amscot at the end of June by a tow truck, that nobody smelled anything? Nobody saw anything. Nothing stood out. It was just towed because it was left on a parking lot in a business for 3 days. So for 19 days, that girl never drove that car, so it wasn't like something that she was able to go back to it and drop a body off in it. So there again, where is the forensic? The forensic evidence that they found doesn't match what happened when they picked it up. And the tow truck driver said that in his deposition. So, and I'm not, Levi and James and the doctor, I am, you know, no forensic expert, and I am no law enforcement background, none of that. But as a publicist for many years, you have to look at what you've got in front of you to know how to deal with it. So I'm good at analyzing things. And right now, I'm not analyzing anything that shows me that there's forensic proof, because everything we were told by police or investigators throughout the year were kind of just smashed by the FBI reports that couldn't back up all of those claims.
Michelle,
so, how do we answer that?
Well, of course, keep in mind, you know, we're money backing quarterbacking. I mean, we don't have the entire case. That's first and foremost. You know, the detectives on this case, assumably, hopefully, picked this evidence up and collected it properly, bagged it and tagged it properly. And, you know, this case, for instance, I mean, human error does exist. I mean, this one piece of evidence that was compromised. So, you know, they need to do an internal audit to find out what was the breakdown in terms of handling the evidence.
I just wanted to ask a question to all of you, because we've talked about you have to be guilty beyond a reasonable doubt and have to get the preponderance of evidence and on. Well, that's in a courtroom setting, and so we discussed it. I'm just curious what each of you think personally. If you had to say right now, one way or the other, did she do it or did she not, what would each of you say?
James?
If I had to make a decision, if I was on a jury right now, based on everything that I've learned, read, seen, and heard, I don't think I could. I don't think I can convict her right now. I mean, it would be inconclusive.
Levi?
But the question is, what do you think? I'm not asking in a court of law. I'm asking just what do you think, your gut feeling right now?
You know, my gut feeling is I want to say yes, she is probably guilty, Doc. But I really don't know. And that's not a chicken way out or not an answer you're looking for, but I'm not sure she's guilty.
Yeah.
Well, I would say that, you know, we've been talking about the lack of forensic evidence, but I think that we're giving the benefit to Casey because she waited so long to report her child missing. Maybe if her child was reported missing right whenever she went missing, then maybe we would have more evidence and there would not be all these mistakes. And maybe it would be a more clear investigation of what happened. So I don't think that we should give Casey the credit for waiting so long to report her child missing. And I would say in my gut that she is guilty. I'd like to see more evidence, though, before we electrocute her or give her the death penalty. But, you know, if the evidence proves that she's guilty, I have no problem with her being executed.
Dr. Archer?
You haven't answered.
Do you have a straitjacket for me?
You give your answer, and then I'll give mine. You give your answer, then I'll give mine.
I wish you were closer. I wish you were closer with a couch, sir, because, you know, I've owned a marketing and PR company for many years, and this was my first missing persons case. You know, when I came on to this particular case, all I did was want to help with the media and make Cindy and George look the way I knew that they needed to look. And I don't have the forensic evidence in front of me. And at this point, I think I'm going to take the fifth because no, do I think she is guilty? No.
Yes.
No, I don't think she's guilty, and I think she might know something. But to answer Levi's question, this young lady has never admitted to hurting her daughter. She's admitted to check fraud. She is admitted to lying to the cops and taking them all away around the mulberry bush, but she has never admitted to harming or killing her daughter. And the death sentence was on the table previously at one other time, and before they pulled it, she never took a plea then either. And for me, after talking with this young lady, meeting this family, I don't know how long Padilla was in town, but I spent 2.5 months with the Anthonys and in that house. And for me, I want the hardcore proof. And I definitely want, you know, the final report from the FBI that's missing from the autopsy report. So if that tells you the direction I'm looking in, then so be it. But at this point, I believe she knows something, but she never reported her daughter missing because she thought she was safe with somebody. And it wasn't until Cindy got all over her that she admitted that she's been trying to get Kaylee back and she couldn't. Now, whether or not that's a lie or not, we'll soon know.
Is she trying to get it back at a bar?
You know, again, you know, I'm sure the defense is going to throw in what they know about that situation, too.
And I think the defense has made a big mistake when they're saying now that a stranger did it, because Casey has already locked herself into a story whenever she said Zanny the nanny did it, and now they're saying that it was a stranger. So I think that's going to be very hurtful for them when it goes to trial, when we have conflicting stories coming out from the defendant. It's going to hurt Casey's credibility with a jury.
I don't think anything else could hurt her credibility at this point. You know, I mean, or the family. I mean, anytime any family gets through something like this, it's amazing. We all have skeletons in our closet. We all have issues. We have our family members that may be recovering addicts, etc. But none of that ever comes out in our life because we live life to the fullest. But when something like this happens and your whole life is under a magnifying glass, I don't know any of us that would ever want to endure what they constantly endure every day. They can't say hello without somebody twisting the way they said it. And in this particular case, is Casey innocent of everything? No, she's not. But again, Dr. Archer said about Misty Cummings being 16. Well, let us not forget that Casey was a young mother too, you know. And so, you know, that plays on the emotions, I guess, or something. I'm not a mom, so I don't know. But I just know that, you know, you walk into a house, And I have friends that are in abusive relationships or alcoholic husbands, and you walk in and you feel that dark feeling. I never felt that walking into that house despite all the crap on the outside of that front door. And for me, I always carried that with me. But now, Levi, you show me the proof, I'll be right there behind you, my friend, because the only thing I want is voices for justice. I want a voice for this young girl, and I want Kaylee's murderer to serve time or be prosecuted however they do in Florida. So I think we're all on the same page with that. Do I agree? Do you all agree?
Oh, I definitely do. And just real quick, I'd like to give some Brad Conway and Martin Ejim, I mean, what a great job they did with the family. I mean, they're keeping it under wraps, and Brad's doing an extremely great job. And, you know, that's impacted his life as well. But I totally agree, Michelle.
They're going to be on 48 Hours Mystery tomorrow night, aren't they?
Saturday night, 48 Hours Mystery.
Yeah.
And folks can go to blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes and actually see the embedded video there. We have a caller on the line. Caller, do you have a question?
This is your next panelist.
Oh, hello, Mr. Mark Williams. How are you, sir?
Fine, thank you.
Fine. Well, welcome aboard. Welcome aboard. We're going to kind of shift, folks. If the panel has to go, any last thoughts, or you all are welcome to continue joining us for the next half hour. Dr. Archer, do you have anything else, or would you like to stay on with us?
No, I'm not going to be able to stay, unfortunately, but just want to thank you for the opportunity, and I enjoyed it. And, you know, I guess to answer my own question there, in my gut, I think that that she is the murderer. But if I were on a jury and had to cast a vote at this point, I would not be able to do it.
Well, we appreciate it, and we enjoy watching you on issues and headline news, and so keep up the good work, and thank you for having a voice for justice, Doctor.
Okay, thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Levi, how about yourself? Will you like to continue on with us for the next half hour, or any last thoughts?
Well, I might can stay on a little bit longer, but I just want to say that I do agree with you somewhat on the Anthony family. I think they have been a little bit unfairly criticized, and even though I think Casey is guilty, I think that people need to remember, if they think that Casey's guilty, is that she's the one that did it and not her parents, and we can't blame her parents for it.
Good point.
I think everybody's responsible for their own actions.
Very good point. Anything else, James? Would you like to stay on the next half hour with us, or any last thoughts?
Unfortunately, I have a client waiting, Michelle, but I want to raise the flag one more time for justice. You know, please, everyone, keep in mind that, you know, our system is made that you're, you know, obviously innocent until proven guilty in the court of law and not the court of public opinion. And, you know, let's just stay focused on that. And you know, we don't have too many rights left in this land. And that's a protected by the Constitution. And you know, I'm just glad that we have it. And Levi, it was great debating with you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
We'll do it again soon. Thanks again,
yeah.
James. Take it easy.
Thank you, Michelle.
Keep
good
up
night.
The good work. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All righty, ladies and gentlemen listening, still with us, we will be taking your calls. 347-838-8622 is the call-in number, or you can join us live chat at blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes. Again, with us right now is Levi Page, host of Fugitive Fridays on Block Talk Radio. And then we also have Mark Williams, regular on Nancy Grace, especially during the Haley and Haley case. And so, Mark,
yes, ma'am.
What's happening in good old Orlando?
Well, you know, while the rest of the country freezes, it tends to warm up down here. It was 86 degrees today. But other than that, we have a couple of things coming up in the in the Anthony family case, and it's particularly Casey Anthony. First off, about 1,300 new documents were released today to detail interviews between Casey Anthony's family and prosecutors taking her to trial for her daughter Kaylee's murder. There were about 1,300 pages. Again, the transcripts from depositions from George, Cindy, and Lee Anthony. And there seemed to be a little bit of some discrepancies in there, but remember, it was a year ago that, almost a year ago to the date, that George Anthony kind of nailed the coffin shut, no pun intended, in his daughter's case by saying she did certain things or she had access to certain things, and to today. So those were released today, and it was just under the Freedom of Information Act. There were significant discrepancies between what he told the grand jury and what George told prosecutors earlier this year when they questioned him under oath. But the other thing going on is tomorrow, Friday, the check fraud venue or the check fraud case that she will probably be tried on first. She took some checks belonging to a close friend. The attorneys in that case want to change a venue, so Casey Anthony won't have to be tried in Orange County, where they think there's a lot of hostility towards her.
So when will that case take place?
No definite decision. It looks like it's probably going to come up very shortly, as opposed to her first-degree murder case. And again, the attorneys in the case want to change the venue. They want to move this puppy out of Orange County as fast as they can.
Do either of you, Levi or Mark, believe that that's actually going to help or make or break this case?
You know, the check fraud, you know, I think that it kind of shows that she really has, if you believe that she's guilty of it, that she really has no morals. I think she also did this to her own grandmother, that she has no morals or standards, and she can just think that the rules don't apply to her. But to me, the check fraud, you know, I really don't care about it. It's I think we have a bigger fish to fry with the murder case. But, Mark, I have a question for you, since you're down there locally. You know, we hear a lot about how will she get a fair trial in Orlando or any of Florida, but I heard a talking head on one of the shows a while back who said that this is only getting coverage on CNN Headline News and then the local media there in Orlando. Other parts of Florida are not covering it to the extent that you guys are. Is that true?
Well, I'm not sure what other markets are doing. I think when this thing, Levi, first came out, everybody covered it, but it's become just really a local case right now. My suspicion is that they won't be able to find an impartial jury here in Orange County. I think they'll be able to find an impartial jury in the Panhandle up near Pensacola or in South Florida. So those are the two places, I think, where they'll find an impartial jury for the murder case. And for the check charge, that's just gravy, because if they find her guilty in all the check charge charges, she could spend 75 years in jail.
So if it's just gravy, why waste taxpayer dollars to go to trial on that right now when there's a capital murder case pending that everybody believes she's going to get guilty on? Wouldn't that hold weight?
Well, I don't think it's a waste of taxpayers' money, because in any case, even the capital murder case, she's innocent until proven guilty. But the deal is that this came out, and the charges were filed, the complaint was filed by Amy Huizinga, and it's like any other case in the state of Florida. They've got to go through the trial for that. You know, it's almost for me, it's almost like a darn warm up. But I think they have her dead to right due to the fact that they have videotape of her spending the checks. And again, Levi brought up a good point, which I had forgotten about, because there's just so much information. Yeah, she stole from her grandmother a couple of years ago.
And she admitted all of that. I believe to her father while he was visiting her in jail one time, because that was aired on Nancy Grace as well.
Yeah. And so this is, I think it's just the warm up act to the other trial.
But if it's a warm up, doesn't it cost money?
I think it's Amy Huizinga is the one that's pushing this forward. The victim in this case is the one that's pushing it forward.
The victim of $700.
Yeah.
So just to file the paperwork on a case like this cost a lot more than $700. You know, I go back to my original question. She's on trial for a capital case. 80% of the American population believe she is going to go to get at least guilty, if not go to, I guess, the death penalty. And if she gets that, that's life without possibility of parole. That holds a lot more weight than check charges. Why spend the money going to court right now to do that?
This is the judicial system that we all live by, whether you're on the West Coast or whether we're here. Charges were filed. A complaint was filed by Amy Huizinga against Casey Anthony because she allegedly stole X amount of dollars in checks and used them for her purpose. The complaint was filed. The police and the state attorney's office must now go through the motions, whether we like it or not, because we haven't even seen the tip of the iceberg for the bill for this first-degree murder case.
And also,
we were talking about
that
earlier, Mark. What do you think, in the end, that the bill for everybody involved, not just the legal aspects of things, but for everybody that's had to be a part of this from day one, what do you think that bill is going to be?
Well, initially it came out as $1 million. That's what they were guesstimating it. But since this case is dragging on, it's going to be upwards of not two, maybe three, because if they have a change of venue, that means the entire circus and the entire judicial circuit goes to wherever they hold the case. And hotel rooms are not cheap anymore, trust me.
Yeah, don't we know that? Levi?
The thing about the check fraud trial is that I think that if Amy Huizinga would drop it, that the prosecution would too, but I think that she actually had a right to a speedy trial, and she wanted that speedy trial. And as far as the criminal case, I don't think that Casey Anthony has asked for a speedy trial.
I gotcha.
And with the death penalty, that slows it down more, because when there's a death penalty case, there's a lot of extra precautions that go in there, because the lawyers have to be death qualified, a jury has to be death qualified. It's going to take a long time.
Somebody by the name of IIBeef stating that I don't know much about the law, but that is true. I don't. I'm not a law enforcement agency, but I would think that in a case like this, that for $700 check charge or whatever it was, couldn't that be something you could file out of court for?
If Amy Huizinga wanted to.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I would just think, you know, if I had done a crime like that, I would, you know, just let's settle out of court, you know, or pay the money back or something of that nature instead
it's
of going into.
She's stone broke. Even her jail account, her canteen account, is $4 or $5 in the red. She has no money. Amy's
so
not
she has no money.
Money.
How did she get to Puerto Rico on July 8th?
No, she never. Ooh, Amy. Casey never went to Puerto Rico.
No. Oh, Casey Stone broke. I thought you said Amy Huizinger was.
No. Amy.
Well,
it's Casey that's broke. Hell, she hasn't held a job in a couple of years.
Yeah, money's a big issue with this. We had the doctor on earlier, also talking about the emotional and physical aspects that have come with this.
Yeah.
This particular case, but money definitely has been a root of all evil in this particular case. There's no doubt about that. Would you guys agree to that?
It's
Levi?
A root. Yeah. Go ahead, Levi.
Yes, I would. But I just heard that George Anthony actually put more money in Casey Anthony's trust there in the jail.
Oh,
so I don't think that she's in debt there anymore.
And from what I understand, do we have a number, Mark, of what all the strangers have been sending her and stuff? I heard on Nancy at one time that, you know, money was going into her funds from perfect strangers. Is that still continuing?
Well, not if it ran a $3 debt the other day until George put some money in there. But she has been receiving, when the case first started and she was in jail, she received checks of anywhere from $5 to $50 to put in her canteen. They're in the way of my files right now. But, yeah, strangers from all over started putting money in the account. And at one time it was up around $600, but it's our understanding she has spent about $2,000 since she's been in jail the past year.
Wow. What do you spend that on in jail?
Well, you spend it on a lot of things. You spend it on sports bras. That's number one. You spend it on beef jerky.
Ooh, yummy.
It's a whole list, and that list hasn't come out recently because nobody's asked for it. But it was just a whole list of kind of comfort foods that she wanted. Bottles of water, that's the big thing. Shrimp cocktail in a can, that was another thing. But she's allowed to do that, and all the prisoners are allowed to do that one day a week. And she puts the order in the morning, like on a Thursday, and it comes back Thursday afternoon.
Interesting. Well, Mark, you know, earlier we had spoken about the evidence at hand and all the document released, and then you mentioned that documents were released again today. You know, you've been on this case since day one. This is your daughter in prison for this crime. Do you see anything in those documents that are smoking gun from a reporter's standpoint?
Well, the only thing that I would see is if I were her parent, and George and Cindy are doing this quite well, they are trying to plant seeds of doubts among any potential jurors in the state of Florida or any place by going on the national TV shows. And they started, Cindy Anthony started with that when Casey was first arrested by saying it was rotting pizza in the back of the car. That's the big thing. I just got off another radio show a short time ago, and we talked about evidence in the case. And as you and I have talked about before, I think the state attorney is holding something. I think he's holding something very close to the chest, because if he wasn't, and if I were Baez, I would have said, okay, well, I'm going to call your bluff. Let's go to trial right now. The hell with it. Let's go to trial right now. Let's do this, and let's let you spring this on me, and I'll have my team to try and refute what you're saying. I mean, Baez right now appeared on the Geraldo Rivera show on Fox last weekend, saying for the first time that they would consider a plea deal if it was given to them. You know, previously, no, we're not going to do any plea deals. Well, now the word plea deal is certainly becoming part of their vocabulary, Michelle.
I thought they offered. I thought the plea deal was still on the table. I did not realize that they had taken that off the table on the
there
second.
I don't think there was ever a plea deal, but earlier on there was immunity before the body was found.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, plea deal, immunity, whatever, but it was on the table for about a week, and then they withdrew it because they said, fess up, because they were trying to get her to squirm a little bit, and she wasn't going to squirm.
Well, again, though, I go back to my same question. Don't you think that if prosecution has that smoking gun, that wouldn't it save a lot of time, energy, and money on everybody to show your card so that plea deal is accepted and we can close this chapter?
Why show your card? Why show your card to the defense or to the media?
To give them time. To give the defense time to prepare for a rebuttal.
And that's the big thing. Now, you know, we've seen the dogs that have hit on the Anthony property. We have seen the dogs hit on the car. We have partial conclusion, or the conclusion, actually not a conclusion, just the statement that they think they, in the back of Casey's car, they see an outline of a child's body. And the Anthonys have been trying to blame this on everybody underneath the sun. Hell, I'm surprised I haven't been blamed yet.
Yeah, wait a second. Now you just opened Pandora's box, Mark.
Hey, I say that tongue in cheek, Michelle. You know.
Yeah. You're just pissed you weren't any in on that hit list or something, you said.
Yeah, can you imagine that? I wasn't on Dominic Casey's hit list. And I got a lot of comments on that. The first part, of course, is very tongue in cheek about not being on this hit list with other people. Not being allowed to go to the memorial services. We had Leonard Padilla and his associate on there, Nancy Grace, Kathy Bellich, and some two-bit journalist who says he's a journalist. He was on the hit list, but not moi. And, of course, tongue-in-cheek, and then I put the hit list up there, and then I got serious about what these people are. I mean, I had to get some things off my chest, and that was it. And I've had some great comments, including from one of the star prosecution witnesses I think we're going to see is Jesse Grund.
He's in that show on 48 Hour Mystery this Saturday, actually. John Harold, what was his name? John Morgan. I was really surprised to see that those two gentlemen were on that show Saturday night. But
well, I've seen bits and pieces, and I already have my DVR set up for that show on CBS. I think that runs at 10 o'clock Eastern.
10 o'clock, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a question in the maybe Levi or Mark, you can answer this question. Somebody in the chat room is stating that actually Baez did pay Amy back for the check that for the couple checks that Casey wrote. Is that correct? Because I would think that should take the charges off the table, and that would imply to me that Amy's not pushing for the trial; someone else is.
I don't know. I couldn't confirm that, because if he pays for the checks, why is he going to court tomorrow to get the venue changed for that trial?
Interesting. Oh, good point. Levi, anything on that?
Well, if she still stole the money, it's not that that Amy gets the money back. It's what Casey did. She stole the money. Like if someone went inside of your house and took something,
right?
That's robbery. But if they gave it back to you the next day, it's still robbery.
So let me ask you this. My car was didn't return one day, and 5 days go by, and the person I loaned it to just to go and get something, they didn't bring it back when they were supposed to. So I filed a police report, but found out I was not able to do so because I gave permission to the individual to utilize my car. So if somebody in the state of Florida, I don't know if the rules are the same as in California, but if somebody gives you the permission to have your car for a week, and they take a check out of your checkbook that's in the car, does that still apply in Florida? Or, again, for the blogger that's posting stuff, I don't know the law in Florida, so that's why I'm asking.
I would think that, that does apply, because Amy gave her the consent to take the car, but not to take the checks. I think that, that's cut and dried right there.
Interesting. Yeah, interesting. I'm being told that Amy was paid back right after the charges were filed from a Bank of America, was paid for the losses by Baez. Seems like these chat room individuals know this case pretty well, because that was news to me. But then again, Amy Huizinga hasn't been much of a subject of interest to me. So,
yeah, she's a minor player. She's one of the people that got this thing rolling to begin with.
Yeah, for $700,
mm-hmm.
You know. But then again, let me ask you guys this. I go back to the same question. We have 10 minutes left. I'm surprised, Mark, everybody loved you last time, that nobody is calling to speak with you and Levi. But what is, you know, they may have that smoking gun for the capital case, yes. But what in the documents are showing us anything but character assassination? Is there forensic evidence that leads anybody to believe that
Michelle,
this individual...
Michelle, you should get off this innocence thing, number one. Number two is, yeah, we have evidence that there was a dead body in the back of her car, in the back of her Pontiac Firebird. Obviously, the dogs that came in and hit, the cadaver
right.
dogs came
hit
in.
Hit in the backyard.
Okay. I mean, that's pretty substantial. The duct tape is so unique that it was only sold in Ohio. And what's that doing in their garage? Okay. And those are the three things that come to mind right now. Like, again, I have a milk box full of documentation and back of me right now. But those are the things that stick out. And they're trying to pin this on somebody else, like a Jesse Grund or the Grund family. And it's not going to work. And if Jose had anything, he'd say, let's go to trial. And he hasn't done that. And now he's asking for a plea deal. Plus, he's going on television shows saying, you know, my gal is innocent.
Yeah, that was an interesting point about the tape, and I'd learned that last week whenever I was doing some research on this case, that particular brand was only sold in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the Anthony family is from before they moved there to Florida.
Interesting.
Yeah,
but didn't they say it didn't match the roll of duct tape that was at the Anthony house? It didn't match with the place where they tear the tape?
That I couldn't tell you, because you can always, if let's say Casey, and I'm just using this in supposition, let's say Casey used that roll of tape for the deed. Well, it could have been George needed a piece of duct tape for something, and he found it, and the guns wouldn't match up.
Right.
By the time investigators got back there.
Interesting.
Because George,
has this case, Mark, you know, we have about 6 minutes remaining, folks. If you'd like to call in with a question for Levi Page, make sure you tune in to his show tomorrow, Fugitive Fridays, and Mark Williams. What emotional toll, if anything, has this taken on you? Because you've been, you know, there were times I saw you on so many networks all in one day. You know, you were covering this case from day one.
It has taken an emotional toll to a certain extent. When this thing first started again, I thought it was going to be 3 days. Orange County would wrap this thing up. There have been, I rearranged my sleep schedule, my rest schedule, because I was doing morning news. I'd get up at 1 a.m, get out the door at 2 and be at work at 3, be on the air at 6 a.m, okay, Eastern time. And then I'd go home, catch a couple of hours of sleep, talk to the Grace folks in the car to Orlando, to the studio, do at least an hour there, and then back home by 10 and try and wind down from something like that. So it took a toll on the emotions, and then you get really wound up into this case. You almost think that you're part of this case, which you aren't. But you spend a lot of time in the case, and it came down to the fact that there were times when I just told them, I'm not going to do the show tonight, just due to the fact I need my Friday night, or I need my Monday night, or whatever, because it's been a bad week, or it's been a big week. But when we found out where the body was found on December 11th of 2008, I had another thing going on that night, and I called my producer, and I says, I've got to be on the show tonight, and they put me in front of the house, which was well worth the price of admission, because I love breaking news, and that was the biggest breaking news story that I've covered in a long time.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Levi? Any last thoughts about the emotional toll with this case or any? Because when I look at your site, I know that you report on so many of them, and we work with many families. And I'll tell you, it unless you've got your calendar situated, you can live, sleep, and eat this type of stuff, and it can get the best of you. What about with all the shows you have to do?
Yeah, I think that it does take an emotional toll on everybody that's involved. And especially a case where a child is a victim, like Casey Anthony and Kaylee Anthony.
Yeah, Kaylee Anthony is definitely the one that's been the victim here, at least right now. And I'm not holding out for innocence, Mark, just to let you know, like I told you the other night, show me she's done the crime, and I would be the first to put her away, and that's the bottom line. But right now, we do need a voice for justice. We do need a voice for Kaylee Marie, and if there's any last callers out there or last thoughts, post them on the chat line. We'll continue. Someone's asking me, tell them how... I don't know about that question. At any rate, but tell us a little bit about what's coming up on your show tomorrow night, Levi, and I know you're also doing a show next week on Haley and Kaylee, correct?
Yes. Actually, don't have a show tomorrow night. I do Fugitive Fridays, the first Friday of every month, with Cheryl McCollum. She's a crime analyst from Atlanta, and she's a regular on the Nancy Gray Show. She specializes in cold cases, and she's an instructor at Bodder College, and we highlight fugitives that are on the run. We do that the first Fridays of every month. But, yes, I am going to do the Kaylee Anthony and Haley Cummings case yet. I don't have exactly what we're going to talk about. But last week I did a show with Steph Watts, who is worked with Greta Van Susteren and Nancy Grace, and we talked in depth about the Haley Cummings and Kaylee Anthony case, and we also had Leonard Padilla on as well.
And you're what do you have on the horizon, Mr. News?
I'm just going to keep my nose to the grindstone with this case right now.
I thought you were going to tell me keep your nose clean.
Well, that too, but I mean, I'm just going to keep the nose to the grindstone because, you know, things could happen in this case in a heartbeat. I'm going to be watching tomorrow to see if the check fraud charges get a change of venue. That's the first step in this, to see where we go with this.
Do you really think he's going to get a change of venue? It seems as if every motion he's tried to make, he gets denied anyway.
I don't think so. Because even though there's been a lot of pretrial publicity, I don't think so. I've got to agree with you on this. He's not, for a $700 case, he's not going to, the judge is not going to grant a change of venue.
Yeah, there's people
Levi, do you agree?
There's people that have jobs that do not follow this case day in and day out. They don't follow it as closely as a lot of people do. I think that they will be able to find a fair jury for both the check fraud and the murder case.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Any last thoughts before we go, Levi?
Well, Michelle, thanks for having me on. It was an interesting discussion, and keep up the good work, Mark.
Thank you, Levi. I appreciate it, and I'll be tuning into your show And Michelle, on my part, all I can say is my website is HalifaxAreaNewsWatch.com. I provide news from Central Florida on that. Also, my thing up there is, why aren't I on your hit list, Dominic Casey? That's still up there, and I've got to do a follow up to that. But that's a hoot to read. I mean, it really is.
And, you're a hoot.
I appreciate that. But anyway, keep up the good work, Michelle. Okay.
Thanks a bunch, Mark. Our next show will be Wednesday, October 28th. 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific Time. Entertainment Tonight's Diane Diamond will join us on Voices for Justice, called Media Divas, Making a Difference. Again, we thank all of our guests, our listeners, this evening. And again, thank you for joining us. And remember, you too can have a voice for justice. Good night, folks, and thank you for tuning in.
All right, bye.